Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and joining me today in the friendly confines of Studio B is Steve Lasker.
Hey, Robert.
Hey, Steve. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We are here today to talk about containers and Docker. It's kind of an industry buzzword, a lot of talk about it, a lot of interest in it. And you're here to explain to us, if you will, what these mean for .NET developers. What does it mean for me as a developer? How do I use it? How do I take advantage of it?
Yeah, I mean, .NET is, you know, we obviously have a lot of developers using .NET for a while, a long while, and containers is a big buzz. Mm-hmm. Containers is thought of as a Linux technology right now. We're obviously addressing it in a couple different ways. We'll talk more about how we have ASP.NET that will run on Linux. But we also have Windows container support coming for Windows containers support coming for containers. get a little circle going on there. But what we want to do is, if you're a .NET developer, what does this mean to you? How do you prepare for working in containers?
Right.
So that's what we're going to focus on today.
Cool. Sounds excellent.
So the first part is, what does containers actually even mean to me? So if we look at our local development environment, right? So I would have my local environment, desktop, laptop, doesn't really matter. And you're building this FieldForce app with, you know, Visual Studio 2015, you know, all the greatest and latest. When you want to deploy this app for UAC, you know, for user acceptance testing, you need to actually describe that environment separately, right? So you give them a list. This is the environment I need. I need a SQL 2016 with full text search, case sensitive collation. And if you, you know, think mm-hmm. about this, these are the things that don't really work side by side in many cases, right? You have to, SQL has different instances for this.
Right.
So it gets a little complex. Then you would set up your environment to have those things running, and then you can use your build server and push the app into that environment, right? We've been doing this for years, seems to make sense. And in staging, we have to do the same thing. But now in production, well, production for now is still clean, we're doing the same thing. What gets interesting is, I don't know how many of you guys work on just one app. We probably have a couple of apps we're working on, some that might have been done last year or a couple years ago. It'd be nice to just upgrade those to the latest and greatest, not really practical. So I need to swap out my environment and actually be able to work on this other app, bug fix, whatever. And it has its list of environment mm-hmm. that it needs to actually run. So now, maybe I'll just wipe out the user acceptance testing environment and put out this new stuff. And that's all fine. I'll get that app. And I kind of skipped over a little bit what it even takes to set up my development environment. We'll skip that for the moment. But now in the staging environment, mimicking production, I need to be running both of these things. And how many of these things start conflicting with each other? Where are the environment variables set up? Where is the process isolation set up? You start to get complexity, and you're probably not running this both on your laptop, so you start to have some problems.
That introduces fragility and issues with, well, you know, it worked on my machine, it worked in the user acceptance testing machine,
yep.
put it in staging or production, things aren't working, why?
And, you know, production might have a hot fix on it or it might not have a hot fix on it. There's all kinds of different variables, which is what drives us all crazy.
Right.
So we push this out again, right? So the container metaphor is, let's just kind of take a step back because sometimes we like to learn from what other people have figured out. That, you know, before there was containers on ships, they had a similar problem. They had packages they need to move around. And there were lots of small pieces running on these big ships,
mm-hmm.
kind of like lots of apps running on a set of servers. And you know what they did was realize this is kind of a little laborious. There's lots of problems, things falling, things breaking, things taking a long time just to load these ships. So back in 1913, well, he was born in 1913, sorry. Back in 1956, they were able to start standardizing on a different metaphor so that we can actually ship these things. So what happens in the container industry is you just take this standard container and you load it up with whatever. Could be round things, could be square things, could be bikes or cars or boats or motorcycles, whatever. And
mm-hmm.
you know, you can get kind of creative because the boat actually needed to be rotated just to fit. So you work within that boundary and you make it work for yourself. The challenge, well, and the benefit then is I can create an industry around hosting these containers. put them on trucks or on trains, you know, fly them around in helicopters, or put small to large ships that will carry lots of these things. Mm-hmm. They don't really care what's in each container. They just want to know how many of these things can I run at any one point.
So then presumably we could do something similar with software. A container would contain an environment that runs an application, right? Yeah. And then you host it on servers somewhere.
Exactly. And you now don't have this big list of requirements of what the hosting environment needs to have to run your app. It's really just like this ship.
The hosting environment needs to be able to host and run a container.
Correct, right? Cool. If you look at these containers, this container ship, they're obviously not loading bags of potatoes. They're in containers. That's how they deal with it.
Right.
And it scales from the small to the large to, you know, I might have my local environment and my little boat there. So you kind of get the idea of they're just, I know how to host containers. Now, if we look at from a software perspective, like you said, there's a couple ways of doing it. So locally, I could run these on my local machine, and I could run, and it gets a little confusing here. So I want to be able to run, you know, we're talking to .NET developers. I have a Windows laptop, Windows machine. I need to be able to deploy my app into Linux, and we'll talk about this in a moment. So I can actually run a Linux container on my local machine in a development environment with tools like VirtualBox. So if you go to docker.com, you can get their Docker toolbox, and they'll get this all installed for you. Typically, we don't think of crossing containers in OSs. So in a production environment, if I'm running Linux containers, I'm going to run in a Linux host. The way that we minimize the OS footprint in a container, so it really is small, you get a lot of density, is it defers a lot of the capabilities to the host OS, like networking. Okay. So there is a matching that happens there. To address the fact that Windows developers want to be able to target the Linux environment, we do have a way to host Linux containers in Windows with something like VirtualBox.
Okay.
The point that I'm trying to avoid the confusion is, what's the OS, the CAN, if you will, is OS specific, and the thing that hosts those containers are OS specific.
Right.
So that's the part that I want to try to explain there. So on premises, you know, I can put my stuff in containers and I can run them locally. I can put Windows containers in Windows and Linux containers in Linux container hosts. And in fact, once I get here, it's very easy for me to just move my containers from the ship that's in my port to the ship that's in, you know, a cloud OS, if you will, whether it be Azure or AWS, actually, or other service providers like Cloud Foundry and some others.
So talk a little bit about the idea of running as a container versus just running in a VM, right?
So think about VMs. So VMs are a way to virtualize the OS.
Right.
But when you start a VM, do you take the VHD and just instance both of those at the same, like without a, like you put some thought into starting up a VM, right? You would sys prep it. You would say the machine name is this. It's going to take a while to fully configure because it's like installing, the first time it's like installing the OS the first time, right? It has to configure itself and it takes some time to come up. And then if I want to run another one of those, I need to back it back out of that configuration because that configuration is really kind of built into it.
Okay.
So they're bigger. They are meant to be instanced and configured each time. Whereas containers, what we do is the Docker container concept is my OS and my app are a binary that I can just clone very instantly. In fact, in the container world, Linux containers start up in like 400 milliseconds. Hmm. So if I wanted to take a machine that was configured and run a whole bunch of them in a VM world, a Hyper-V world, I wouldn't really think about doing that with, you know, virtualized Hyper-V instances. Where in the Linux world, they will actually delegate tasks and instance that container to do that specific task. So the one I like using is I'm doing tax calculations. Mm-hmm. So if I was had tax software, and I don't know the exact law, let's say 7 years I have to be able to support my customers. So am I going to have one code base that has 7 years of tax calculations in it? So that every time I need to process a thing, I can hand it off and it goes, oh, depending on the year, I'll just run this piece of code.
Mm-hmm.
Now, imagine a world where instead of that is that I have a queue, and as it's pulling it off the queue, it says, oh, I'll read enough metadata to know this is 2015, along with 99.9% of the other ones. I'm just going to launch a container to process that calculation.
Okay.
And when it's done, the container goes away. There's no state maintained on it anymore. It basically does its task, starts up really quick, throws it away, and it's gone. I get one that's a recalc of 2012. I don't need to worry about that same container having all the code for 2015 and the last 4 years prior to that. Mm-hmm. I can say, oh, let me go grab the container that knows how to do 2012 calculations. I'll spin that up, do it, and make it go away. Because I don't want to have a bunch of allocation of servers for, you know, code base that's spanning all of it. And of course, don't troubleshoot all of that. So the other thing to think about is if we had a bunch of tasks in the Windows world, historically, I would probably queue up a pool of servers. And as I'm going up the queue, I go, who's available?
Right.
And say, okay, this is the next one for you. Or it would more likely, it would pull. It would spin up and go, all right, I'm ready for the next one. I would pull it. But over time, we have logs that fill up. We have something gets broken on that. And this thing gets stuck, and we don't really know why. Mm-hmm. And now it's kind of clogged up, or it builds up over time. In a world of containers where I kind of think of this item potency, where this immutability, where I spin it up from a clean state every time because it starts up near instantly, I don't have to keep it running. I can just start it up clean each time, do its task, and go away. So there's a lot of different thought processes that become unlocked when you go from Hyper-V VMs to be containers.
Okay.
So that's kind of the main thing.
Excellent.
All right. So let's talk a little bit more about this. Now, in a app world, in the container world, I'm actually compiling my code and the environment, the OS, together. And when that's done, it's the binary, if you will, that we have is an image. You could kind of think of it as like your VHD that was sitting on disk, right?
Okay.
So now I've got this image, and it has my code, my environment. It has everything but the environment variables that get passed into it. So it doesn't necessarily know where its database server is. Let's just say it's the front end. It says, this code looks for the database. And there's a queue, and it knows how to link these two up. So it has these configurations that are baked into it, but the configuration variables you pass in. So now when I want to instance and take those binaries and start running them, I could instance multiples of them at any point. And when I run them, I will say, "Yeah, well, they'll be linked together." And now I could instance them, and that configuration stuff comes in typically as environment variables or host variables.
Okay.
But the binary is the same. That exactly. So now I could just instantly make multiple copies of them. In fact, in staging, where I'm trying to do more replication of what's environment, I obviously just instance more. And then in production, this is where we really start to see it, is now not only do I instance more of these things that get linked together, and each yellow one is exactly the same internally. It's just the parameters that get passed into it. But notice I'm completely isolated from those other ones that are using different versions of SQL Server. So now all of this is running on that container ship, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
The boxes that need to talk to each other know how to talk to each other. The ones that are sitting next to it that don't need to know, they don't care. So now I can get much better isolation, and I can get scalability also, because it kind of forces me to think about this in a scalable way. Does that make sense?
Yep, right. Absolutely.
So, all right, that's kind of the container metaphor. We'll come back to how you can break up your .NET apps for it. But the other thing that comes up is there's lots of variables, right? So is it Linux? Is it which version of Windows? You know, which version of .NET can I use? So if you're using, if you want to have your existing apps, and I say existing because we haven't released .NET 5 ASP.NET 5 yet. So you have a bunch of apps that are already mm-hmm. running in production. I hate the word legacy because it makes it sound old. The
legacy existing means apps. Existing and it runs your business. That's what legacy means.
Okay. Maybe legacy's got a bad rap. But anyway, the stuff that you're currently running in production and you want to containerize that. So we have Windows Server Core, Windows Server 2016 Core. That'll run the full framework, and mm-hmm. you'll be able to run those in a container environment. Now, Core has been out a while. It is a larger footprint. So we strip off things like Explorer and some of the UI, but fundamentally there's still a lot in there. It is a big image. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to kid anybody. If you're what Windows is doing is we recognize that we need a cloud OS, and that is what we think of as Nano.
Right.
So where Windows Server Core is a couple of gig, as historically Windows has been, Windows mm-hmm. Nano is measured in like a couple hundred megabyte. It's small. And it really is just what you need. So in that case, if you're writing new services, definitely target Nano, because you're going to get a lot more density in Nano. When I say density, how many containers can run mm-hmm. On each server. And you can do that with ASP.NET 5. You won't be able to run the full framework. You won't be able to take your existing apps in all of their joy is how they're written and run them. You would take the code, put it in ASP.NET 5, and you'd be good to go. The other thing that we are seeing is that when we're going to cloud OSs, we see a lot of companies that are standardizing on Linux that already have Linux and they're moving developers around. And they said, look, my environment's Linux, I'm staying there. And we have said, well, okay, what can we do to make sure that you as developers that have .NET skills or legacy code, I'm saying legacy now, can run it in that environment. What you can do is take that source and actually target Linux as well. So mm-hmm. we want to make sure we have that support. So that's where ASP.NET 5 comes in. From an Azure perspective, I mean, let's be real. If we're going to be a cloud service provider, do we really care whether you're running Windows or Linux? I mean, we're going to charge you for running in our cloud.
The cloud doesn't care.
It would be silly for us to purposely segment our audiences. So in an Azure, we'll be able to run both Linux and Windows. And of course, the Windows product is coming along here. So that's hopefully helps a little bit mm-hmm. on the .NET and versions of OS. Now, all right, so you got this big app. What do you want to do? You're trying to actually get this running in containers going forward, and you're redoing your apps, or you're writing your next app. But what is the pattern that you might have been doing in the past? So this is why I kind of like to have a little fun here. You have some really big house, big app.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you can just take that thing and put it on a container, right? Containers have a certain size. They have a certain concept of how they move around. Obviously, this is a bit of a problem to kind of move this app around from a container perspective. Likewise, you want to make sure they're not so fragile. So we have fun kind of finding images on the internet. The way you want to build it is more around these scalable units so that you can actually scale from one, just put more of them. That's the main concept.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean, right? So historically, we might think about how we would break up an app into its logical tiers. And there's still some validity to that. There's no question about how you got front ends and back ends and caching and persistence. From a container's perspective, what you're talking about is how do I scale this thing? Now, you're going to want some separation, but it's really a matter of what are the things that I want to create more of based on load? What are the things that I might want to disperse around the world to get a more local? And how can I break my app up that way? So instead of just breaking it up into containers based on the logical boundary, what if you broke it up based on the unit of work? So we'll take our back end, processing or business logic, and our front end and split it up. And now what I've done is I've broken it up here of the thing that I need a lot of, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of customers, we hope, purchasing products and doing checkout and their basket management. I'll bundle those things together. And the back office stuff, I'll keep that separate also, because similar to our tax calculation conversation, do I really need to have, and we'll just, for the sake of simplicity, move that over there. Do I really need to have lots of instances of the back office?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll have two because it's important to have some failover. But the front end is what I really need lots of. And in fact, I might break it up more. I might break it up that all my product information, you know, because people obviously do a lot more browsing than purchasing. It would be nice mm-hmm. if they did just as much. So you might have lots of front end basket, product catalog, and then you have a separate set of containers for basket management, if you will. So that's the way that, you know, we want you to think about breaking these things up. You know, we used to break them up in DLLs. Don't worry, I mean, you can still do that from a down level perspective, but when you're deploying these things, think about how they're going to be scaled and how you want your app to communicate that way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's all about preparation. You know, we want to think of modular. Think about breaking those things into smaller services so that you can communicate across, you know, the boundaries. And in fact, in that way, I don't care if it's written in Linux or Windows or Java or whatever. I'm just going to talk to it as a service.
Right.
Where's your scalable units and swappable units? It's not just scale. I want more of them. I might have a set of containers that I instance and then toss away because it's just a task that I want to do, like the tax calculations. So that was the main part there.
Thanks. That was excellent. I think that does a good job of clearing it up a little bit and giving people an idea of how to start thinking about what these are and maybe how to start using them. What do you think the next steps would be for people at this point to actually start playing around with it and seeing literally how to do it?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of moving parts, and that's mm-hmm. probably what we wanted to cover, and what does it mean for .NET developers. So breaking it down is probably the best thing to do. You know, first of all, get ASP.NET 5, even if you're, you know, in betas right now, mm-hmm. And just do a quick hello world. Just run it at 5 and you're locally on your machine and just get a feel for what that means, break that down. Then you can actually start using this in containers as well. You know, if you're a .NET developer and you're able to continue to use .NET, then you don't have to worry about getting off into Node.js and some other pieces. What we've done is we've added in Visual Studio 2015, we've made a Visual Studio extension gallery available for Docker tools.
Yep, available in the extension gallery. So Visual Studio tools for Docker, I believe. Yep.
Yep. Anyway. So bring that down, and what that'll do is when you're running Visual Studio 2015 and targeting ASP.NET 5, when you right-click and say publish, which is a bit of a misnomer in the Docker world, but it was an entry point to kind of hook in and get people used to it, is by clicking publish, there's two things that'll do. So the first part is we talked about how we want to put this in containers, and that's mm-hmm. really the developer task, is to build an image and then run that image. But you need a place to run it, right? The developers are building the containers. There's somebody else that's building the trucks. So, but you need a place to host this.
Yep.
Now, you could run it locally with the Docker toolbox. So you go to docker.com, and you can get the Docker toolbox, and you can run that with VirtualBox locally.
Mm-hmm.
You could also run these containers in Azure.
Hmm.
So using our Docker tools, let's be completely transparent. So for right now, October of 2015, the way we host containers in Azure is by running a VM that is a container host.
Okay.
So you can run a Linux container host, which is a VM, or a Windows container host. And then it has the Docker agent on it, or the Docker daemon, and you can run your containers in it. Setting up that VM is a little complex mm-hmm. Because you want to have certificates, so you have a secured channel. So using our Docker tools for VS, we will help you provision a Windows host using Windows Server Core for now, or Linux. And that will configure the server in Azure for you, give you the certs locally, and so you can get a secure connection to it. So now that you've got your host running, you've got your truck, now I can put my containers on it.
Right.
So the second part of that Visual Studio Tools does is it will compile your app, the binaries. It'll take the ASP.NET package, right, because there you actually package an ASP.NET app, and then take the output and put it into an image, build a Docker image, and then run that.
Okay.
We're very focused on command line tools, so what you'll actually see is we will, in the output window, you'll see the commands that we issue for Docker to do the Docker build, to do the Docker run, and so forth.
You can do it all in PowerShell
Yes, you can do it in PowerShell for an ARM for provisioning the host.
Okay.
From a developer perspective, right, because that's the trucking companies, the shipping companies.
Okay.
We leave that up to the hosting environments. So, yes, you can use PowerShell and you could use Docker Machine in some cases, but it's really, think of that as the the PowerShell is the environment person. From a developer, we really want to focus on the Docker CLI, the command line interface. Mm-hmm. This way, it's agnostic whether you're running against Linux or Windows. Mm-hmm. It's the same API, and it's just a matter of, I'm going to run my container over there. And if you look at the output window when you run the Visual Studio Docker tools, you'll see that we're just spitting out the commands that you need.
Right.
So you can use those as well. So that's a great way to kind of test them out using your .NET skills with containers. Dan Fernandez has got a bunch of videos that walks down in more composable pieces.
We'll have links to that in the show notes.
Yeah, so look below. So there's great places there, and just experiment with it. Just like we had the pictures of the broken houses and so forth. You can run those in containers with something Windows Server Core. That's the other thing is. Take a look at Nano. It's still, as of the recording of this, it's still early. Mm-hmm. But Nano is definitely our cloud OS that we are looking from a Windows perspective. So if you're trying to compare Windows to Linux and trying to make sure that your hosting environment people are okay with that, you definitely want to be focusing on Nano.
Right.
Because it's a much smaller footprint. It will start up much faster, and that's our competitive to the Linux environments. Okay.
Cool.
That's a great place to start.
So I'd like to invite you back somewhere down the road, not too long, to actually show us. We'll take an app, ASP.NET app, and actually use containers in it.
Absolutely.
See what pieces we can break off where, and maybe go through some actual demos.
Absolutely. And we'll have more tools available for you then. And we definitely just wanted to use this one just to kind of, what does it mean to be from .NET?
Because
it's not just these commands. It's
like anything, you need to know what it is and why it was invented and how you can benefit from it. And then you figure out how part.
The thing that was, and it's, you have to kind of put yourself into the world. So the thing that sometimes you have to go in and you don't really know what you're going to learn. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea that you just instantly spin up containers and shut them down as immutable images was just, I would never think of doing that in the Windows world. I wouldn't spin up a Windows server, start a Windows server, and wait for it to finish, and then do some task and then shut it down, right? It's just, people are using containers to build and compile their code. And so if for something like Java or Go, where I have to compile it, in my build server, that's actually what really happens, right? It's where everything gets integrated together. Mm-hmm. But depending on what version I have running locally, when it works on my machine, it might be because I have something slightly different on my machine.
Right.
So now what I can do is take my code, spin up a container that's the exact same image I use in the build environment, and volume map its drive to my local source code, compile that code in the exact same image, build the actual image that I want to run, and then that becomes the output, and then throw that container away.
Right.
Or the task-based stuff we talk about, the tax stuff. So it's
cool.
It's really keeping your eyes open to the different ways of building software in the container world that was most interesting.
Awesome.
All right.
And then I imagine we can look forward to future versions of Visual Studio that do a lot of that kind of stuff for us.
Yeah, we're working on a lot of different tools and what we're trying to also do is make sure that we're not doing it the old way, and we see that there's a lot more focus on command line, rerunnable scripts. So that's the big pieces of feedback. And we're also trying to make sure that we're targeting the Linux community appropriately and the Visual Studio Windows community as well. So you'll see a lot more stuff happening there.
Right. Cool. Right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed that, and we will see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.